percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Hey there. Glad to have you along. You might have heard the news that there's this big thing that's supposed to hit the planet, and they've named it after the god of chaos. So an asteroid named after the god of chaos might be a bit intimidating. The other thing that's intimidating is they've been practicing in case an asteroid does hit. And the practice run, I think what happened was they were able to deflect the asteroid, but they split a chunk of it off, and it was heading for New York. And then when they tried to fix that, I think it was supposed to head for Denver, and it went to New York. And then they had to figure out what they were going to do to evacuate New York. Okay, this isn't sci-fi. This is the real science. They're trying to figure out, worst case scenario, do we have a chance if an asteroid is coming at us, and what we might do about it, if, you know, and what the odds are of us succeeding in whatever that is. Okay, anyway, that's some of the stuff that's in the news. I also like the guy, the French guy who decided to float over the Atlantic Ocean in a giant orange barrel. Guess what? He made it. That was, wow. That's a lot of daring and bravado. He made it. He was hoping to get in, I think, in March, but he was a little overdue, and that's fine. He made it, which is a good thing. There's another story that I just saw, the tectonic plates. They think, and this is not, they don't know what's going on, but they're not quite sure what triggered it, but right off the coast of Portugal, they believe that one of the tectonic plates is shifting and has broken off, which could mean, in other terms, that will shift the continents. And as the Atlantic Ocean shrinks, Europe is going to go to Canada. Okay, I mean, not quickly, but it'll make a move. So that was fascinating. And the one story that caught my eye this morning was the guy who's the doctor who has, and this is really amazing, mirror touch synesthesia. He found out about it as this guy, he was in the hospital, a man is having a heart attack and really, really intense pain, the whole nine yards. He has the heart attack and the guy dies. And as this happens, this doctor also experiences the entire thing. They took, I think, half an hour to revive him because all of the symptoms that somebody else has, he mirrors them. Now, they say that isn't quite the same as empathy. This is a literal, full-blown, if he sees somebody who's in distress across the room and that person is nauseous, he feels it. So that's a fantastic and fascinating kind of ability. I don't know that I would want it. Okay, and if you're a paraglider touching down in Australia, beware of kangaroos. BuzzFeed had this. The guy touches down. You think, oh, he made it. He's great. He lands on his feet. No big deal. And out of the blue comes this kangaroo. There was actually two traveling together. The first one comes up and punches him. He's like, whoa. So welcome home. Anyway, I'm really, really looking forward to the interview today. This is a site that I found a few years back and finally have had an opportunity to go back and revisit. And when I did, I found out the whole website had been redesigned. Reincarnation Research. Walter Semkew. He's a reincarnation research president, reincarnation expert. He's been doing this for quite some time. The first thing I saw was a video, and I don't know, probably the algorithm directed me to it, but of Laurel and Hardy reincarnated, and two guys who very much emulate. And when you're looking at them and see the dramas that they do, the interplay that they have, it's amazing how realistic and how incredibly similar their mannerisms are. So I wanted to talk with Walter about all the other stuff that he has going on as well. And so he's here to give you an idea of the research behind reincarnation and the evidence. And Walter, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me on.
And I love the new website. This is easy to navigate, and it's absolutely full of content.
I've been working on it a long time.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, the cases. I was familiar with Jim Tucker, and was it Ian Stevenson?
Dr. Yes.
Ian Stevenson, that when I had known about their research, and then when you came along, you kind of dovetailed and added on and went like the extra mile of making it a lot more. Stevenson's work was a little bit more educator or science based, and so it was difficult to go through it. Yours is very accessible, and it just seeing the examples that you show of people, and you even have celebrities, and you've got all sorts of diverse people to give you an idea of who might have reincarnated and where they would have, you know, what they might have brought through this time, like where Donald Trump came from. This is fascinating. What got you started?
Well, it all started back in 1984 when I went to a medium who supposedly channeled your spirit guides. And it was a time when I didn't even believe in mediums or psychics, but I was in my residency training in medicine, and it was winter in Chicago, and this friend said I should check this medium out, and I only did it, you know, because there was not much else to do in winter in Chicago. And in this session, they told me about two past lives, one during the time of the American Revolution, and afterwards, I didn't really know whether to believe anything they said, and I pretty much went on with my life. I became a corporate medical director and moved to Los Angeles, and then about 12 years later, I had this sudden intuition that was very powerful to study the American Revolutionary past lifetime. So I did research on that. And in addition, I became a scholar in evidence of reincarnation. And as you mentioned, Ian Stevenson is a pioneer in the field. What he did for a period of 40 years is go around the world studying young children who had spontaneous memories of past lives. And the typical case goes like this. A child, as soon as it can speak, learns to speak, it starts telling their parents about a previous lifetime. They'll remember specific details like name, where they live, what their parents' names were. The child gives enough information to the biologic parents that they can actually locate the past life family. When the child is reunited with the past life family, the child can identify people who they've never seen before by name or relationship. They will know all sorts of things that only people in the family would know. And based on the large amount of information that the child knows, which none of these kids or subjects that Stevenson studied were famous, you know, mm-hmm. So it's not like somebody could read it in a paper and tell them, you know, this is what you should say.
Right.
You know, it was spontaneous, and the child gives enough information that the past life family accepts the child as the reincarnation of their deceased loved one. And over a period of 40 years, Ian Stevenson compiled 1,500 of these validated childhood past life memory cases.
Well, there was a lot of research with that in India, and that's something they've tracked. And I thought the one here that was, I think, probably the most media friendly that people might know about is James Lineker.
Yes, James Lineker is the most important American case. It evolved exactly the same way as Stevenson cases evolve, though in Lineker's case, it was his parents who became the researchers. And as a young child, James would have these terrible nightmares, and he would scream out, plane on fire, little man can't get out. And his parents would rush into his bedroom trying to find out what's wrong. And his mother noted that he was kicking at his sheets like he was trying to escape from some contained space. And over time, James gave them enough information that they could actually research who this person was. In his past lifetime, he was a World War II fighter pilot in the Pacific and died during the Battle of Iwo Jima. And this case first was publicized on TV back in 2005. And I became aware of the case at the time. And one of the things that reincarnation research shows, including from the University of Virginia, Dr. Stevenson's work, is that people can look exactly the same from one lifetime to another.
Hold on. And we're going to take a break. I want to get into that, too, because I think that is also fascinating, the characteristics that come through. ReincarnationResearch.com is the name of the website. It's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Walter Semkew, reincarnation researcher. And this stuff is fascinating. And the pictures, go to the website, reincarnationresearch.com. There's a ton of stuff there. You can also get the book, Origin of the Soul. But these are cases, and there's a reason that knowing some of this will benefit you. And what was your goal when you're starting this? We'll go back into how the faces resemble each other. But how did you hope to help people when you connected them with past lives?
Well, to me, the most important part of this research is, not only does the case evidence prove that reincarnation exists, but the cases, including Stevenson's cases at the University of Virginia, show that people can change religion, nationality, ethnic affiliation, and race from one life, and gender, from one lifetime to another. And most wars and conflicts are based on differences in these cultural markers of identity. Like we see all the war between Jewish Israeli people and Muslim Palestinians and so forth. Well, when people realize that you can be Jewish in one lifetime and Muslim in another and vice versa, then people will stop fighting about these things. And to me, that's really my motivation for getting this research out.
When I first saw the thing with Laurel and Hardy, the two guys, the brothers that emulate them in so many ways, that's what I was struck by. The characteristics and the features were similar. And you post some of these pictures of some people that we might know on your website to give people an example of how this happens. Do you have a favorite?
Let me just kind of refer back a little bit to the James Leininger case.
Yes.
And I mentioned before that it was first publicized on television in 2005 when James was about 6 or 7 years old. And I predicted that when he becomes an adult, he'll look exactly like his past life persona, whose name was James Houston, because pictures of Houston are available. And sure enough, now James is about 20 years old, 21 years old, and now that he's a full-grown adult, he looks exactly like he did in his past life as James Houston. And there's many other cases studied at the University of Virginia that also show this phenomenon of people looking the same from lifetime to lifetime. And in fact, if you, on the website, reincarnationresearch.com, the two things that I would suggest is at the bottom of the homepage, there's a link to a page that is entitled Evidence and Principles of Reincarnation. And that will give you a whole overview on the research. And that does include the photo of James Houston in comparison to James Leininger, where they look exactly the same. And then on the left side of the website, one will see case categories. And these are all the principles of reincarnation that have been deduced from all these case studies, these 1,500 childhood memory case studies. And one of these principles is physical resemblance. So if you click on physical resemblance on the homepage, you'll see all the cases that demonstrate similar facial features from one lifetime to another, all in one spot. So this way, people can read for themselves and judge for themselves. As you mentioned, Ian Stevenson wrote in a very difficult academic style, and he's very difficult to read. And what I've been doing is I've been rewriting his cases in an easy-to-read format. And so you can, for instance, review all the Stevenson cases that show physical resemblance all in that one location.
Well, the other thing that I think is fascinating when you get into this, the talent that comes through, and some of this is you deal with child prodigies who are artists or they have some kind of innate talent, and then you compare to the past life, and there's one where you have Gauguin, I think, Paul Gauguin, the artist, and
yes.
That the illustration that he does is compared to a 16-year-old prodigy who has a similar style, artistic style, without having studied it.
Well, actually, that case involving the reincarnation of Paul Gauguin, and people can see that on the website. If you just put in the search bar Paul Gauguin, the case will pop up. But what was amazing about this case is that Peter T. Camp he was interested in art ever since he was a child, and he did these series of sketches. And it turns out that, eventually he was identified as the reincarnation of Gauguin. It's a very detailed, fascinating case, which people can review on the website.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was 50 years old, he realized that he had unconsciously replicated the artistic development of Gauguin. So in these series of sketches, there's men in berets, there's a woman in a circle, there's a view of Jesus from above, which is very unusual perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Peter unconsciously replicated the same sketches that Paul Gauguin did, and Peter did it unconsciously, showing how we draw upon past lives and the skills and talents that we develop over many lifetimes.
And see, that's so fascinating. There's a lot more to this, and I like the depth. You get into ghosts, spirit beings, the soul's energy template, and so it's like if you have a certain personality, certain issues, then those would also come through with you. We're going to get into that in the next break, but I do want to say that if there is any way to see a documentary on this, and the Google search with the guys Laurel and Hardy, that for me was absolutely astounding. And there's another one that Anne Frank is another one that I have seen a documentary on, and the woman who searches and finds, has all this information and finds out she's the reincarnation. And I believe she also met with one of the relatives. I'm going to ask you about that in this next break. There's just so much I want to cover, and we only have so much time, so I just want to kind of cram it all in here. So if you're listening, reincarnationresearch.com, and Walter Semkew is my guest, and we're going to just, quiz him about some other things, including animals and reincarnation. And do we reincarnate with animals? And then he had this incredible experience with a squirrel that doesn't have anything to do with reincarnation. But it's just mind-boggling the connections we have that we have yet to really fully incorporate and integrate into this reality and mindset and mind that we are able to do all these things. And they might have a past life influence. All right, so stick around. In the meantime, if we miss anything, go to Wendy's Coffee House, the website. I'm going to put the links up for his information. And this, when you go to his website, you'll be there for days, possibly months, maybe lifetimes. Okay, Walter Semkew, don't go away. Up next, more of this reincarnation stuff. Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Walter Semkew. He's a reincarnation researcher. He's done a ton of stuff. If you go to the website, there is so much there. And the thing is, he covers it from all angles. I thought that the soul template, the hologram, those kinds of things that kind of you're imprinted, your soul characteristics are imprinted. Because I do think that we tend to show up in batches, and we each have a certain, like a core that we are working on, and the patterns, and we seem to assimilate like in little puzzles together in our soul groups. And to me, that's something I felt, and I'm looking and reading all his stuff. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, here's something, here's the research that might bear some of that out. But we were talking before the break about the people that were recognizable, and I heard you when I mentioned that Anne Frank was in there and that she reconnected. Could you fill in some of the backstory of that? Because that's another fascinating case.
Yeah, this is, in my opinion, one of the very most important of reincarnation cases, because it dramatically demonstrates change of religion. Anne Frank, most people know, was a child prodigy writer who died in a concentration camp. Before she was taken to the concentration camp, her and her family hid in the attic of a building for 2 years in Amsterdam. The Nazis eventually discovered them and, again, took them to concentration camps. But Anne Frank wrote a diary, and she was a very gifted writer. She wrote about very mature themes like the nature of man, good and evil, and so forth. And after she died, her father, Otto, was the only survivor in the family, and he eventually was given Anne's diary that was left in that house where they were hiding, and he had it published. And that's one of the most famous books in the world, The Diary of Anne Frank. Well, Barbara Carlin, and Anne Frank died in 1945, and Barbara Carlin was born 9 years later, and she is a typical Ian Stevenson type case where she had spontaneous memories from childhood. And as soon as she could speak, she told her parents, "My name's not Barbara, it's Anna Frank, and you're not my real parents. My real parents are going to come and get me and take me to my real home." And her parents had no idea what she was talking about.
Yeah.
Her parents were Christian, so they had no orientation towards reincarnation. And they even took her to a psychiatrist to find out if there's something wrong with her.
Yes,
but,
yes.
By that time, she learned to like not talk about it. She said that whenever she would talk about her past life or other life, she noticed everybody got so tense. You know, that's how she says. And so she kept quiet, but she had full memories of the attic, the arrest, the concentration camp, and so forth.
Wow.
And it was very traumatic for her. You know, it was very lonely. She had nobody to talk to, and so forth. But she became a child prodigy writer, just like Anne Frank. And she wrote about the same themes, like the nature of man, good and evil. And she had her first book published at age 12 and went on to have another 9 or books or so published in her teenage years. Well, her parents, again, thought her past life memories were fantasies until they went on a vacation trip to the big cities of Europe, including Amsterdam. One thing I should mention is her parents, when she said, my name is Anna Frank, her parents had no idea who the historic Anne Frank was, because the diary of Anne Frank had not yet been translated and published in Sweden, which is where Barbara was born.
Mm-hmm.
So when she said, "My name is Anna Frank," they had no idea who Anna Frank was. Well, by the time they went on this vacation trip, Barbara was 10 years old, and by now the Diary of Anne Frank had been published and distributed in Sweden, and the parents now knew who this historic Anne Frank was. And so the father wanted to go to the Anne Frank House and Museum in Amsterdam. He picked up the phone at the hotel to call for a cab. And Barbara says, you don't need a cab. We don't need a cab. It's right near here. And he said, well, how could you know? You've never been here. And she said, well, let me show you. And she took them by the hand and led them on a 10-minute winding path through the streets of Amsterdam directly to the Anne Frank House, and which her parents were flabbergasted. And inside the Anne Frank House, they went into the room where Anne had slept, and Barbara points at the wall and said, look, Mommy, the pictures of the movie stars are still on the wall. Her mother looked at the wall and saw that it was bare and reflected that to Barbara, who looked again and saw that's true, there's nothing on the wall. She got confused, started to cry, and her mother said, well, let's ask the tour guide. And the tour guide says, yes, normally the pictures of movie stars that Anne Frank had clipped and taped onto the wall were in that location, but people were touching them, damaging them, taking them. So we took them down, but they'll be put back up, but this time under glass, so nobody can touch them.
Wow.
And that's the first moment that her parents realized that she actually was having past life memories and that she was the historic Anne Frank. And as I mentioned, this shows a change of religion. Well, Anne Frank was persecuted as a Jew in Nazi Germany, died in a concentration camp, but was reborn into a Christian family in Sweden, changing both religion and nationality. And I make the point that if the Nazis knew you could be born Jewish in one lifetime and Christian in another, the Holocaust would not have happened. And in the same way, we see all this fighting in the Middle East based on differences in religion and culture. If people realize, you know, you can reincarnate in the culture that you don't like,
yes,
people, it'll create a level playing field. People will just treat each other better, and they won't fight about these things.
Well, and that's some of the stuff that is in here is so phenomenal. We can't cover it in an hour. You get into some, like the ghost things where there's the instrumental transcommunication. You talk about some of that, the energy that reflects the physical appearance. And I've seen some of these. Mark Macy's one of the guys I follow online who has these pictures that look like, there's one that looks like John Denver. There's some of the facial features that come through in various lifetimes where you can actually identify a person. And there's one here where you've got a car and it looks like it was possibly an accident or somebody in the car that could be them. And I have to say that this is really, really looking at it, very powerful content that you have, and I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you. And, you know, the reason that I created the website is there is so much evidence. I mean, there's overwhelming evidence that proves reincarnation, but people just don't know about it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if I was going to present all the cases, you know, we'd be talking until tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
So I created the website so people have easy access to this information. And if there's a particular person you're interested in, again, on the search bar of the website, say for the Anne Frank case, just put Anne Frank in and the video will pop up. Oh, I'm sorry, the case will pop up. But also with the Anne Frank case, I have a video of Barbara telling her own story. And it's very compelling. You know, if you watch the video, I mean, you realize she's genuine and telling the truth.
Yeah.
And, or if there's any other case that you're interested in, we do have a section on celebrity reincarnation cases, and you can click on that. Or again, if you're interested in a particular celebrity, just put it in the search bar. And if the case is up there, it'll pop up.
Okay, hold on. We're going to come back. I'm going to get into the animal stuff, the reincarnation with animals. My guest, Walter Semkew, KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, talking reincarnation. Now, I do have some past life memories. This isn't the show for that, but I also suspect that we're going to get into the do we reincarnate as animals. And there is a segment on this the website, well, actually a lot of information, but one a little boy who had a snake past life. And the other thing was Walter had an experience where he was talking to a squirrel. Okay, I want to get into that. And I want to also say the reason I did that little story at the very beginning about the angry kangaroo who comes up and punches the paraglider, that wasn't an accident. That kangaroo knew that paraglider and said, "You earned this, buddy." And he walks off. Okay? Even. Scores even. I just thought, that's just hilarious, because that would be one of those things where the kangaroo knew that guy and said, "I've been waiting lifetimes to do this." Okay. The little boy who reincarnated as a snake. That is a fascinating case.
Yeah. So this is a case from a book written by Jim Tucker, who was taken over for Ian Stevenson. We earlier discussed Ian Stevenson was the pioneer in reincarnation research, studying these children who had spontaneous memories of past lives that could be validated. Well, Stevenson died in 2007, but Jim Tucker, another MD academic psychiatrist, has taken over for him. And he wrote up a case where a little boy said that he remembered being a snake in a past incarnation. He remembered how he died, that this particular man came into a cave where the snake was living and came with some dogs, and this man then killed the snake. Well, this little boy claimed to remember the specific individual who killed him when he was a snake.
Yeah.
And even confronted this person, you know. And so Dr. Tucker uses this case to perhaps open the door that we can also have animal incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
But another way to explain it, too, is that people can have telepathic relationships with animals. And so the boy, or the soul of the boy, who had lived in the area where the cave was, may have simply been observing this whole incident with the snake and the dogs from the spirit world and perceived it, remembered it, and then when he was reborn, described the story.
It had, yeah,
and
yeah.
You had mentioned, you know, my squirrel experience.
Yes.
Well, I you know, in my work, I've met and worked with many psychics and mediums, and some of them say that they communicate with animals, like their dog or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always extremely skeptical of that. You know, I mean, how can you prove that?
Yes.
And you know, like one would say that her dog said, "Oh, I love my mommy," and all that. And it's like, well, I mean, that's something you could easily just make up.
Right.
But I had sort of a eye-opening experience related to a squirrel. And I love squirrels, and where we live, I feed them, and they'll even get so tame that they'll let me touch, you know, their nose, or I'll hide a peanut behind my finger, and the squirrel will, like, push on my fingers with its nose.
That is cool.
And then I'll let them have the peanut.
You know,
it's all very cute. And one day I was at work, and I'm a medical doctor, and I was at work doing paperwork at about 3 p.m, where out of nowhere, I get this vision of the place, you know, in her bedroom next to a deck, which is where I would feed the squirrels. I see a vision of that sliding door and like a 8-foot squirrel standing up on its rear legs looking at me. like scared and saying what's going on or something to that effect. And I thought, wow, that's bizarre. I mean, that never happened to me before, where I had, you know, this spontaneous vision in waking consciousness.
Right.
And I didn't quite understand it. But when I went home, I found out that my wife's niece was at our house, who was keeping my wife's elderly father company. And she had that sliding door to the deck open and was in another room, and then came to the door and saw this squirrel almost trying to get in. And so she, like, started to yell at it and scream at it to chase it away. And when I got home, you know, she related this story. And I said, what time did that happen? And she said, it was about 3. Mm-hmm. And she, by the way, said, by the way, that squirrel's never coming back here again. and I realized that, you know, at that's the very moment where I had this vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, I work with a medium by the name of Kevin Ryerson.
Yes.
Who channels a spirit guide named Atun Ray, who, in my estimation, is able to make accurate past life matches, at least with a high degree of accuracy. And, you know, I asked him about these events, and he said that we are all living things are interconnected. You know, it's a popular kind of idea in
spirituality. You've got a minute.
Okay. It's a popular idea, but it's literally true. And so even though not all of us are psychic, where we're conscious of these sorts of things, we are interconnected with our pets and animals. And once you establish an emotional connection with an animal, you develop a telepathic bond, and pets can then even reincarnate with you in a following lifetime. So your pets can reincarnate with you.
See, that is fantastic. And I know people who think that they recognize their pets because of little mannerisms that they think they've come back, which is really amazing. Okay, and we can't cover all this. Walter, I really, really love your website. And anybody who goes on there is going to absolutely be astounded at the volume of content that you have. So I hope that anyone listening right now will check it out, reincarnationresearch.com, and your book as well. Which book do you recommend?
So I have a book called Born Again, which contains the most important reincarnation cases, and then Origin of the Soul and Purpose of Reincarnation, which addresses big picture issues.
Okay. And if you're curious about whether or not you've incarnated into a past life, well, look at the pictures and see if you resemble somebody. That might be a clue. And other than that, get onto Walter's website and do a little research, a little reconnaissance, and you might get some more help there. I appreciate you listening. It's Wendy's Coffee House Blogspot. You can check out the other stories there and then the links for this show as well. Walter, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
And whatever happens one way or the other, stay curious. Anything is possible. See ya.